The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Can you hear me? Okay.
Yes.
Our fundamental practice is sitting Buddha. Sitting Buddha, being aware of dharmas, being aware of conditioned things, moment after moment. So we are all sitting Buddhas. We're all embodied awareness, fully illuminated, transparent. Living in an unconditioned realm, observing the conditioned from moment after moment. That's our fundamental practice, noticing. Simple, paying attention, relaxed. Living in nirvana. Ajahn Sumedho said, "The best way to die is to be enlightened." Of course, it's not that easy. It's not that easy to be to realize that we're sitting Buddhas. But that's what we're all here for, isn't it? We're all here to liberate, to be liberated. To be liberated from our suffering. To be liberated from our attachments, attachments to our body, attachments to our thoughts, attachments to things, people, roles, activities, conditioned things. So from the unconditioned perspective, we observe and practice liberation from all conditioned things. And there are four protections, four contemplations. Awareness practice is diffuse. It's not a concentration, really. It's just relaxed being. And it can go on and on and on. It does go on and on and on. But there are some concentration practices that were offered by the Buddha to help us. And I want to focus on one tonight. But the four protections are metta practice, to protect us from anger, contemplation of the Buddha, the face of the Buddha, to protect us from doubt, contemplation of the unsavory parts of the body, to protect us from desire. And those are all very interesting practices, and we could talk about each one of those. But next time you are feeling doubt about yourself or doubt about the worth of your practice or doubt about the practice itself, that nagging, devastating doubt. Imagine the serene face of the Buddha. That tells you everything is all right. Smiling. Everything is all right, for example. But the one I want to talk about tonight is what the Buddha described as the supreme mindfulness. He said, like the elephant's paw is supreme in the jungle, the contemplation of death is the supreme mindfulness meditation. We all know that we're going to die, right? We all know that we're going to be sick, very sick. Maybe we have all been very sick at one time in our lives. We all know that we're going to become old. We know that we're going to be separated from all that is near and dear to us, to everything that we love. This is the truth. We know this. It's common sense. There's no way to escape from these truths. We'll all get old. There's no way to escape it. We try to hide it so much in our society. So it's important that we try to face it, to kind of counteract this powerful momentum in our society to suppress these facts. Getting old. Millions of dollars is spent on restaurant lighting so the person across from you doesn't look like they have wrinkles. Of course, the cosmetic surgery is a huge enterprise. The gyms are full of 50-year-olds working out. And working out's good. It's good for, it's good to keep the body healthy. So the body doesn't feel as much pain and suffering in old age. But I don't think that's the only reason that all of these 50-year-olds are working so hard in the gym. Advertisements are full of beautiful people with white teeth, no wrinkles, smiling, happy, athletic. Death is hidden away. It's something that's not talked about. I'm a hospice volunteer. But most people don't want to talk about it, except for spiritually minded people. It's a sure conversation stopper at a party. People don't want to think about these things in our society. It's not always been that way. Contemplation of death is an ancient and venerable practice in Asian societies, practiced to this day. For many people, it's the ultimate practice. Visits to charnel grounds is an essential monastic practice. I hope this doesn't seem grim to you or morbid. It's not supposed to be. It's supposed to bring us some ease and peace and lightness. These practices are meant to do that. It's supposed to free us. If there's some fear, well, that's good. If you're in touch with some fear about death, embrace that fear. Let it develop. Feel it. That fear may be driving a lot of behaviors to create self, to find something solid, to find something safe. In power, in prestige, in material goods, to create a real self as a shelter against our impermanence. My teacher Suzuki Roshi advised us to die on the cushion. All of Plato's students were advised to contemplate on death. The great Tibetan Buddhist sage and poet and teacher, Milarepa, said, "Without mindfulness of death, whatever Dharma practice you take up will be merely superficial." So we can see how if we practice this contemplation, "I will die, my death is inevitable." If we somehow bring that into our awareness field, our death is inescapable. Our sickness is inescapable. Our old age is inescapable. It can give some resonance to the moment. It can enliven our practice. So those are some of the phrases. And I have some of these contemplations. I have a lot of these that I can give you at the end. But it might be something you'd like to practice sometime. begin your meditation with a phrase or with going through the remembrances or just during the day. I will die. I will die. I will die. Because what happens when we die? When we die, we have to give up all of our attachments. Everything. We have to give up our jealousy. We have to give up the person that we're jealous of. We have to give up the person who hurt our feelings. We have to give up the self that worries about hurt feelings. We have to give up all of our material goods. We really have to give up all of our money, our house, our car. It's all gone. It's all gone then. Everything we're concerned about. We have to give up our bodies. These bodies that we've lived so intimately with for so many years. That we've bathed, brushed its hair, exercised, perhaps done all kinds of things to make it attractive, fed, kept warm. And we have to give up all of our loved ones. Our loved ones can't help us when we close our eyes. I've been sick for the last 4 days. I've had a headache. It's been something, there's something that happened to my neck, and it's given me a headache. And I practice with that. And it's difficult to practice with that. Sometimes I don't want to practice with that. Sometimes I just want it to just go away. But then I settle in and I practice and there's my spaciousness, there's my nirvana. And there's the headache. And then sometimes I get a little panicky that I'm stuck in this body. with this headache. And it's not like I can change my legs in meditation. If I get up and move around, it's still there. But I don't have any mental suffering. All of the mental suffering that could be going through my mind just is, it's just not there. It's irrelevant at that time. I don't want anything. I'm not mad at anybody. I just want to be with my headache. And practice with my headache. And it's hard. It's hard when it's painful. It's kind of easy to practice when things are pleasant. It's easy to be spacious and on a sunny day, the clear blue sky, or when we're eating something good, or just sitting pain-free. So, my headache cleared the path. Death will clear the path. We will all wind up in bed. What happens to our aspirations then? What happens to our fears then? All the things that cause us mental suffering. Become irrelevant in the face of death. Contemplation of death can be the great liberator. It can be the medicine that cures all of our ills. Contemplation of sickness can do that. It can clear the path. So this contemplation is intended to urge us to practice. It's called samvega, the urge to practice. And I could see what that meant when I was sick. I'm still sick. Because it's not easy. It's not easy to practice with pain. It certainly won't be easy to practice through the molten chaos of our dying. Some people believe in rebirth. And the people that believe in rebirth feel samvega. In Buddhist theology, being born as a human being is a very fortunate circumstance, a very rare and unfortunate and rare and fortunate circumstance. Ideal for practice. There are, according to Buddhist theology, five kinds of beings. And these beings are beings in themselves, but they also reflect our human condition. So the lowest form of beings are animals. Sorry, I know we love our dogs, but I think what they mean is that like a wild animal is only concerned about food and getting and protecting, paranoia and attack and survival and those kinds of things. A very base being. No room for nirvana in that. No room for practice in that. And going up the ladder, we have hungry ghosts. A hungry ghost has a huge, huge belly and a teeny little neck. It can never get enough. So obsessed with getting full, getting something that it can't practice. And then in the middle are human beings. We suffer, but we don't suffer that much. We suffer a little bit, enough to practice, that we can practice with our suffering. And we can see our existence. So we have the motivation to practice. Our suffering pushes us to practice, to resolve. Our deluded minds. And we can do it. We're actually in a position to do it. And the next two levels are gods. The competitive gods, full of glory and greatness and defeating others and feeling just great about, or just completely energized by the battle. Football players, basketball players. Not that they aren't human beings, but just that aspect of their character can be very consuming in itself. And the realm of the paradisical gods, where everything is just so lovely and pleasant and dreamy and great. There's no impetus to practice. So these people who believe in rebirth, maybe some of you believe in rebirth, are very motivated by the fact that they are going to die. Because when they're dead, it's all over. This effort on earth is over. Either they make the best of this time and resolve their attachments, or they come right back. Maybe in one of those lower realms. But I don't know about rebirth. But I do know that contemplation of my own death by imagining a time or an event where none of my attachments will ever exist again, inclines me in the direction of, why not just give them up right now? See the birth of mind states, of conditioned things. See the birth and see the death of conditioned things. But with this awareness, can give more space the shining light of death can liberate our lives. The thought that death can come at any moment . We never know when death's going to come. This is true. I read that 216,000 people die every minute. How many of them expected it? Shocking. It's shocking when it comes. Even to people that have been terminally ill for quite some time, I think it's still a surprise. Can this really be happening? We human beings are very fragile. Something could fall on us and kill us. A little blood clot can kill us like that. I know so many people, you probably do too, who were told, you have pancreatic cancer. And they're dead within 6 months, young people. We all know these people. We all know these stories. It could be us. There are many ways that death can appear: accidents, illness, natural disasters. Death can come at any moment. This is cause for contemplation. Death is inevitable. This is cause for contemplation. Nothing can help us at death. Our loved ones, our bodies, our material possessions. None of these things can be of any help to us. Nothing can be of any help to us. Nothing could be of any help to me when I'm sick with my headache. Nothing. it's interesting how these remembrances are so aligned with the four heavenly divine messengers that visited the Buddha. You probably all know the story of Buddha, but I'll just briefly recap. He was born to a great ruler over many lands. And the ruler asked a seer to tell him his son's fate, destiny. And the seer said, "Your son will become either a great chieftain like yourself, or he will become a wise man, a sage, a contemplative who will abandon the world." Of course, the Buddha, the father didn't want that. He wanted his son to follow in his own footsteps. So he made his life very, very pleasant. He built him four castles, one for each season. And they were decorated according to the season, and music was played, the music of the season was played in that castle, and beautiful people surrounded the Buddha and taught him and brought him up, and wonderful foods and sounds and tastes, and so everything pleasant for the Buddha. And he got married and had a child when he was 16 years old. Then when he was 25 years old, as the story goes, the Buddha felt a powerful urge to leave the palace grounds and go into the village and see what's what out there. So the father, knowing this, had the village all washed clean, all the roads were washed. The walls of the homes were painted and the stores. Fresh flowers and trees were put everywhere. So the father tried to create a very pleasant village to protect the Buddha as well there. But the Buddha, when he got to the village, he saw somebody who was walking kind of hunched over with a cane and looked kind of pallid and very thin. And he asked his charioteer, "Who's that?" And the charioteer said, "Well, that's a sick man. Human beings get sick." And then the Buddha noticed an old man wrinkled with a long white beard. And the Buddha asked the charioteer, "What's that?" And the charioteer says, "Well, that's an old person. Human beings get old." And then the Buddha saw a corpse being carried to the charnel ground by six men on one of those things. And the Buddha said, "What is that?" And the charioteer said, "Well, that's a dead man. Human beings die." So as you can imagine, the Buddha, being the Buddha, was very, very moved. And they began to head back to the palace grounds. And then he saw a very beatific-looking man, shaved head and robes, walking peacefully, slowly. And he asked the charioteer, "Who is that?" And the charioteer said, "Well, he's a contemplative monk who has abandoned the world, abandoned all things of the world." And as the story goes, at that point in time, all the power of the Buddha's many, many incarnations, many lives, life after life after life of powerful, sincere, profound practice came over him like a tsunami, like a powerful wave just took him over. And he uttered these words. He said, "Why should I, who am subject to decay and death, be attached to that which is subject to decay and death?" So those heavenly messengers line up so nicely with these remembrances. I am of the nature to grow old. The old man. I cannot escape growing old. I am the nature to have ill health. I get sick. I cannot escape getting sick, having ill health. I am of the nature to die. There's no way to escape death, the corpse. And then the wandering contemplative, the monk, who left everything that was near and dear to him. He did it then. He didn't wait. He separated himself from everything that he loved and everything that was dear to him. We don't have to be monks and leave everything that's near and dear to us. But we can practice our pure awareness. We can practice consciousness. We can practice the unconditioned knowing, seeing the conditioned. We can give up body, speech, and mind. We can give everything up and be aware, be closely aware of all conditioned things and live in the world. And these practices can help us do that. And the fifth remembrance I haven't mentioned reminds us that I inherit the results of my body, speech, and mind, my actions. This moment are the ground on which I stand. It's our responsibility. It's our complete responsibility to be liberated, to be wise. Does anyone have any comments or questions or anything you'd like to discuss at all? Okay. So